Hello, welcome back to another episode of the Reliability Gang podcast. I'm here with my right-hand man, Will. How are we keeping today?
I'm doing very well, thank you very much.
You're looking a little bit tired this morning.
I am. I've been driving all around the country, but I'm here, back.
This is what we do. We go around, we get about. We got to get around the UK.
We do get to see some really cool stuff, though. And even, like, on the Ray 2 site, like, some of the beautiful landscapes.
We get to see the UK in full force from a Tesla window, which is, you know, nice anyway. But obviously, you know, regardless of our travels, we're back with another podcast. We're kicking off episode 2 of the Reliability kind of series. Again, I've not actually decided what I'm going to call it yet, because we've only just recorded the last podcast. I've had the time to think about it. But anyway, each episode goes basically through the roadmap that we would take our customers or people through the reliability journey.
Yeah.
So episode 2 is about strategy. So we talked about culture last week and how important it is to be able to adopt the right mindsets. And we got into some really cool analogies about kind of, you know, even like trying to put across metaphors with fitness and consistency and being able to, how does it actually remain consistent? And that's really important that we're in the right mindset to be able to do anything within life.
Yep.
But you can be in the right mindset, right? But if you don't do the right things and the right strategies and the right implementation, then what's the point of having the right mindset?
And know where to focus your attention.
Exactly. Focus of attention is really important. And this is where this is going to be a great podcast, because there's so much to talk about. Okay. Yep. So, Will, I'm going to hand this over to you in terms of what we're going to do. We're going to break this out a little bit into different
sections.
There's
some sections. Key bits, within the... So this section is part two, kind of what is defined as reliability strategy. And this is where, after we've got our culture and a few people are a bit interested in what we're doing, we need to go, right, how are we going to move forward from this point? And usually what we've got as part of the next bit of the roadmap, what Mobius have done and what we try to follow because we've had the most success with it, is that the reliability strategy and the next stage, the maintenance strategy and all of that, these are now really at this point, once you've kind of got a bit of a team together and we've got some buy-in and people are very interested in what we're trying to do, we need to, but what we've got essentially is a toolbox now. And within that toolbox is a list of different tools that we can use to start moving the journey forward. What we've got to do is know which tools we need to start to pull out.
Yeah. And usually, and does that start kind of with a gap analysis to see kind of where they're at? Because I mean, some companies have done maybe some of these things, but not maybe done them to the extent they need to. And I think this is really important as well when we do that gap analysis is to look at what they actually have done. Because a lot of the time what we get is, oh, we've already done that. Yeah. So then we look at it and what extent has it been done to as well?
And that gap analysis, the way that we do it anyway, is we have a series of questions within each kind of segment of the operations and maintenance team as such. So we look at senior management, and like within the business, and there are questions that we will go through with the customer and various different people. We want to ensure that we're getting a pool of information that we can put together. But it's things like, do production value the maintenance team?
Okay.
Strongly agree, strongly disagree.
Do it's maintenance, like almost like a, you know, when the quizzes you do.
Yeah, do maintenance value the production team? That's like within the kind of management part. Then you go into kind of the planning and scheduling. So are all work requests planned and scheduled? Strongly agree, strongly disagree. And we go through all of these questions in different segments. And what that does is we rank it normally from 0 to 10, 10 being like, yes, we plan every single job, 0 being, yeah, we don't do any planning whatsoever. But what that does is it gives you a bit of a spider diagram that can then be done for each one of those segments. So management, planning, scheduling, etc. And then we can put it together into a single one to see, okay, where are we really strong in planning and scheduling? Do we not have very good within management buy-in? Are we lacking in maintenance practices? And that's
very interesting. That kind of gives you then that kind of understanding of where everything is at, but from everyone's perspective as well.
Also,
it's quite important that you don't just get this from one person within the organization as well.
It also gives you a really great tool. So one of these tools that we like to use, it gives you a really good tool that once it's completed, that as we start following through the roadmap at key intervals later down the line, you can do it again. And then you can see how it's changed.
Exactly. Then you can actually measure the actual difference of what was originally.
So it's very likely that most maintenance teams are not really planning and scheduling, especially if they're in reactive maintenance. So you're probably going to score low that. But as part of the roadmap within reliability strategy, we will look at gathering data in a little bit. And obviously that will then change.
Of course. And I think this is really important to understand as well that, you know, when we put these strategies in place, that we're measuring what we're doing. Yep. Because a lot of the time it's great to know that things may be changing physically within the plant and the way that things are actually being dealt with. But to be able to actually measure that in a way, it can really then identify when you do invest that money, you know, what has actually changed from that investment and where's the return as well?
The measurement is key within kind of the reliability strategy. And if you've done, when we teach the ARP course, it starts looking at what we would consider a CMMS system, but it starts looking at, you know, if you don't have any CMMS system and you're not gathering any sort of data, don't try not get bogged down with what we see very often where we're like, oh, we're putting a CMMS system. It's come from corporate. It's about 12 months down the line. Like, it's very much start collecting data now as best as you can.
And I think that's the problem as well with a lot of things. I do understand it because it's a bit like even in your own life, you want to try to capture everything. You want everything to be right, don't you, from the get-go. But when we're talking like CMMS systems, and I think, to be honest, that's a whole separate podcast, really. I mean, it's quite in-depth in terms of what we've dealt with in the past. But when you are dealing with that, it's really difficult sometimes, if you are a bit of a perfectionist, to say, well, I don't want to start putting anything into a system that's not perfect. Yeah. But the problem with that ideal is that a lot of things are happening within the plant in the present moment from that point that are just such valuable metrics that you need to be measuring anyway. So it is a really difficult conversation, but again, that's when, you know, actually, you know, measuring what, not even measurements in terms of metrics, but what is going on in the plant and being seen, and how is that getting logged and identified within somewhere where it can be captured, if that makes sense.
And
as
the
well.
Key kind of takeaway, without, like you say, CMS, probably a whole different podcast, but the key bit from the reliability strategies point of view is start gathering some data, start gathering some information that we can start to use. So things like failure codes, how, like, until you're gonna later down the line within the roadmap, this whole gathering of information is part of that tool, until you start to know, right, what assets am I spending the most amount of time on, what assets are costing me the most amount of money. If you're in a position and you don't know what asset is costing you the most amount of money, how are you gonna ever start to focus your attention on the things that need to be focused on.
So the idea of this kind of question, gap analysis, to really focus on the areas that are hurting you most. Is that the kind of idea?
Gap analysis is going to give you some direction into which tools to initially go at. So you may be in a position where, or like if we go into a site, they may already have a criticality assessment completed. We may review it and actually go, that's okay.
And that is actually a great example, actually, because I visited a customer the other day, and I will actually big him up, because he does listen to the podcast. So I went to see Dan Bridges, and his operation was so great. Went in there, you know, he showed me a lot of the criticality stuff he'd done. He just, you know, he's only been there, like, I think 2 years, but it was literally, right, we know exactly what to do CM on it. Off we go and do it. And it was just like,
absolutely. Quite refreshing, probably.
Very refreshing, but usually they're very, like, not what we used to. We used to kind of coming in and doing CM on everything, and then you kind of then have to then go through the reliability stuff to kind of say, well, why are we doing this? And then we get them into the reliability journey, whereas what Dan's done, he's completely done it in order, and he's done it in a very quick, sufficient, and the framework's beautiful. Yeah. So now when we come in, we're only looking at that real assets that we need to be looking at. And then now it's about a focus of doing that condition monitoring really well on them assets and that selective set. And we're not booking 3 or 4 days doing stuff that is not required. Yep. You know, we're only doing the things we need to. So
that's kind of your gap analysis. That's going to tell you where to, which kind of tools to start picking out the box first. CMMS systems and or if we just take the terminology of CMMS out and just look at gathering data and information. So start recording some information, you know, downtime, start recording how many different types of failures are happening? Are you regularly having this type of
failure? And that could be just as simple as you putting it into
Excel,
a Word
spreadsheet,
document.
Word document.
Genuinely, just like logging.
Start gathering some information that we can start to action. Start looking at how many hours are we sending an engineer on different bits of plant, because that will all later, when we do have a bit more of a CMMS strategy, all of that information fundamentally
so valuable.
It's valuable because, again, when that data starts getting inputted in, it's going to then be used for further justification later. If you've got an asset that's got a problem that you want to invest time and money into in potentially a redesign or whatever may be required as part of the later reliability tools, the business is going to want some form of return on investment and
evidence
justification
as well that it needs to be done in the first place.
So when you've got operations and finance going, why do you want to spend this 10 grand? You can go, well, right now, our engineers are going to that asset for 40 plus hours a week.
And not even that. This is broken down this many times.
For the same failure or whatever. But until you have that, you don't. And that forms nicely into what is Pareto analysis, which is another one of these tools that comes into Pareto and criticality analysis. So this kind of all fits into this data part, which usually would be a CMMS system. Now, to start gathering that data, though, you first need to know what assets you've even got.
Of course, because if you've not even listed your asset or don't know the asset code or what it does.
So this whole part kind of all feeds into each other in some way. So one of the first big stages of the reliability strategy, once we've done our gap analysis, we know where we're going. We may, if the gap analysis and the business review has established that there's no current asset list,
is create a master asset.
We need
asset
to go
list.
Create a master asset. We need to know what we've actually got out on plant that is an asset to our business. So we recreate that. So we go out, create a
So what happens, Will, so we go out there, we identify that that is required to be able to be done. We start to have a look at all the assets on site. What happens if their asset registry or numbering system is poor? That has to really be done from the get-go, doesn't it? Because if not, how do we actually identify what needs to be changed from the get-go?
Yeah, gathering the list of assets, that's fine. When that comes to then the next part, which is, right, we need to introduce this into a maintenance management system because we want to start gathering some data, we need to have an asset code. But the easiest way to do that is to simply a bit of education, sitting down with the customer and saying, look, this is the ISO standard for asset management. This is the recommendation for hierarchy of assets and taxology, I think it's called. I'm not massively familiar, but there's a terminology that looks at how to hierarch the asset. And sitting with them and going, right, let's decide what it looks like for you guys.
Yeah, because I think it's so important at that stage. If you're going to all these assets and you're going to actually go out there and start actually really looking at what there is, kill two birds with one stone and actually start to number these systems in a way that can be valuable for the future.
You might as well do it at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. Efficiency-wise, and I think a lot of the time as well, you go to certain assets and they've got 3-4 different asset codes. And the problem is with it, even if we're trying to use historical information of what is being called, there's a lot of people on site that will call the asset different things. We've had that issue before as well.
It's difficult as well because, like, the thing that frustrates me as, like, a reliability engineer going in, consulting for it, is when we've, like, got people with, and with reliability, again, it comes with the training part of, you have to take what your personal opinion sometimes out of it and go,
what's right.
There's an ISO standard here that tells you how to do this. Like, surely we should just follow this.
then that's the thing. The problem is when you put emotions into this as well, what can happen is, like, you know, for example, we was at one site and they called the blowers, the big blue blower left and big blue blower right. Well, where are you looking at them blowers from behind or in front? Because
this ain't going to work.
It's just not going to work. So the thing is when we do go in to try to create some form of numbering, that number might be foreign to you, but what it does is identify the asset for what it is. That's the whole point and function of doing an asset registry.
And the idea is that if it's done correctly, you should be able to be in a position where you can. The idea between the way I see an asset code really functioning is that it should be done in a way that allows you to drill down into all the parts of the machine that works. And if it's done well, you can do that. So you can, through asset coding and search functions within CMS systems, you can say, show me all the assets within the, you know, factory one. Then you can go in and go, oh, there's a tank within factory one. Show me all of the assets that are associated with tank B. They're all the assets.
And yeah, so when you're drilling down into looking at, you kind of, that's when you're using CMMS really effectively to start to drive down into the assets that you
And that's where your asset coding comes into, because I haven't got it in the top of my head, but it's all around like area, function of the asset, are the associated systems. So you have like system codes, function code, and if you do it appropriately, and it's not, you don't have to follow the standard specifically, but as long as you use it as a guide.
Yeah, because the thing is as well with a lot of these things, when you implement something now, how is it going to affect the future?
Yeah.
And as well, you have to think about the scalability of what you're trying to do. If you are looking to implement the CMMS in the future, how is it going to play now? Because the idea is, if you want to do that, you got to make sure you put that in place from the get-go.
Yeah.
It's a bit like building any database. You know, we've had it even with our vibration databases where we've built the whole database and we're like, be good to add that reading. And it's like some functions are difficult to do that, you know, because when you're kind of on the back foot of it, it can be very difficult. So,
And that's where kind of maintenance management systems and that master asset list really come hand in hand, because firstly, we need to know what we've got out on plant.
Yeah.
That can feed into the maintenance management system. The maintenance management system can now start to gather data and get information that can help with further justification of things down the line. When we come to the next bit, that will be a bit more clearer. But also, from a breaking out of the reactive maintenance perspective, is a real key way of breaking out of reactive maintenance is beginning to plan and schedule your work.
Of course, and you need
that within a maintenance management system to be able to do that.
And that's the thing about this kind of journey. This step-by-step approach allows us to be able to do the things that's required for the next stage. Because sometimes if these things are not done correctly, it's difficult at a later stage to be able to do it effectively because you've not done these initial things. And like asset coding is a simple one. Yeah. But how many plants have we been to, Will, where they aren't aware of what the asset is, or it has three or four different codes and them codes don't really relate to anything in the CMMS. Yeah. And it's a bit of a mess, if I'm honest. It's very messy. Yeah.
The maintenance management system part, which will be probably a whole new topic and podcast, but the main kind of key takeaway from it is that you've got to decide, as part of the reliability journey and looking in that, you've got to ask yourself, right, what are the key benefits and what do we need out of this maintenance management system to in order to become a more reliable plant? So we need to be able to do certain things, da, 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 da. And in doing that, then you need to make sure you effectively gather all the information you need to decide on what system to use.
Right. So say now we've done the master asset list, we've ascertained all the assets in there. Are there any other tools as well that, like what we've done as well and what Will's done really well, is process map diagrams as well.
Yeah.
And again, that's not essential, but some plants that are kind of a bit tricky in process can be very difficult to understand.
It's a good visualization tool that can be a process map or process diagram. Ultimately, they also come in handy later down the line with other tools within the reliability strategy. But they're just really good visual aids to how to map out the process.
Yeah, because I remember one of our mills that we work very closely with, before Will did the asset diagram with it, you look around it and you're like, how the hell
it's a flour mill.
So
if you're familiar with flour mills, it's just lots of pipes everywhere.
And you look around, you look at the process, and it can get really confusing. But when Will did the asset route maps and you follow the process around from the drawing into the plant, you can see it clearly. And it's such a good way of just visualizing the process of how something works.
Yeah.
And when you see it on paper, when you get to that criticality study part, and I know that there's a lot of parts of that criticality that obviously make it up, and you know, in terms of how you define the criticality, but them process diagrams really make it a lot easier to be able to ascertain the bottlenecks within your plant as well.
They feed nicely into that next section, which is towards the end of reliability strategy, which is another tool you can use, which is reliability block diagrams.
Yeah, so, which is kind of similar to that anyway, but I thought I'd mention that as part of the master asset list. Yeah. Again, it's not essential to be able to be done, but I think as you're doing that, if you can get that incorporated as well, and that's something that we do, and we've got some great examples of how that can almost you know, demystify the process within these plants when it is a slightly... I mean, some plants, you can kind of see it. It's quite modular, quite linear.
It's fine. You can see the linear multiple floors.
Yeah, you can see the linear kind of actions with one line that kind of goes in, goes out. But some lines, like, you know, Mills, for example, and all the rest of it, can get very complicated in terms of where the process goes. And when you draw it out and you have it on paper, it allows anyone to understand that process, regardless of their experience as well.
Yep.
So from that process, Will, master asset list, potentially process diagrams. Where do we go from there?
So master asset list, got process diagrams on the side. That's feeding into your maintenance management system. Gather that data. Start gathering data. Big emphasis on that. What that is going to allow you to then do is, at this point in time, we've not done any maintenance strategy right now. All we're doing is building the reliability strategy. We're building the information we need to start knowing where to focus.
Of course, yeah.
So We've started gathering some data. We've got master asset lists. Now we need to know where to start focusing our attention. So that forms your criticality analysis, your Pareto analysis, opportunity rankings. These are different tools that we can use to focus. So criticality analysis is probably the most important initially, because that's going to utilize your master asset list and process drawings to establish what assets are most critical to me based on equipment. So if that equipment was to fail, or if that asset was to fail, is the equipment going to destroy itself, or is it going to have minor damage? Health and safety, is it going to potentially kill someone, or is it just going to be a minor injury? Environmental, are we going to pollute the ocean, or are we going to make a little tiny spill and we're going to be okay? Production, are we going to have catastrophic downtime, cost the business millions, are we going to not do very much? And quality, are we going to potentially have a major quality incident where we have to recall thousands of product, or are we going to potentially just have a minor quality issue?
Of course.
And all those things are really key measures of criticality. And that's where we said we need to make sure the criticality has been done correctly.
Because that's the thing as well, because if you look at all of them four things that you've just mentioned, obviously health and safety, environmental, production, quality.
And equipment.
And equipment, which is kind of engineering. If you look at kind of them five kind of areas, they're kind of potentially owned by different people in the organization. So you've obviously got, you know, health and safety. Well, health and safety executive from organizations needs to be involved with it. You've got environmental, so, you know, EHS people that, you know, especially if you're in plants that have, you know, different substances as well that can cause harm to the environment. You obviously got production. So production needs to be heavily involved in that. Obviously machines, engineering. So basically, that's all five areas of a whole organization that does need to be involved with this criticality study. And from my experience,
that's quite difficult.
Every criticality study that I've walked into a plant has been done by one person or one organization.
And that's because generally the most criticality assessments have a core focus on the impact to production and nothing else,
rather than the other things.
If anyone's gone, oh, we've done a criticality assessment and we've done ABC, usually the focus in that's really critical because it'll shut the line down.
Yeah, that's generally how it's usually, I think, ascertained.
Whereas you may have a piece of equipment, so there may be a chemical pump that is bunded around, let's just say, and it's a big tank full of sulfuric acid, right? And there's a risk that if that pump was to fail catastrophically, it could suddenly start spraying sulfuric acid somewhere. That sulfuric acid pump or chemical pump may just be for a cleaning process. So it may just be only used once a week to clean the line.
It might be kind
down.
Of low in terms of criticality on a production point of view, but very high in health and safety.
And environmental.
And environmental as well,
So you've got, that's where we have to be careful around the criticality. And the same with, you may have two conveyors that are feeding into each other that are very critical to the production line. But one may have a specialist gearbox that is, you know, only
20-week lead time, for example. Yeah.
And it's there's not a spare available. It's very specialist. And you may have, because it's an older line, because the equipment's redundant now or something, and then you've got the other line. So you've now got both assets are just as critical from a production point of view, but from an equipment perspective, one is much more critical than the other. And it's important that that's defined, because when you come to your maintenance management system and you may have a planner and scheduler or someone that's doing a bit of planning and scheduling, If two jobs come in that are, you know, if we've detected with vibration analysis that there's an issue on both them gearboxes.
Well, where do you put your priority and where you place your attention? And that's really important as well, because when you do that criticality kind of assessment with the right people involved, all of the assessments and the criteria that we've created allow us to be able to understand all of them elements together.
Yeah.
And this is why when we do go to site and we have these discussions and when we actually do these actual studies, we have to have the right people in the room. Isn't that right, Will?
Yep. We've got to get the right people. And that's arguably, again, that becomes easier once we've done the culture bit,
because they understand the implication and the reason why they're there as well. And that's inherently why reliability, and this is why we're doing these podcasts as well, is to raise awareness to the fact that it's everyone that needs to be involved in this process. It's not just engineering.
Yep.
So once we've done that, we've got the right relevant people in the room. We kind of go through the criteria scoring that we've got and we start to go through that master asset list and start to score them.
Yep.
Again, what we probably will do is, there's certain subjects with this that we can talk about for a long period of time, and I don't want to get too bogged down into it. I want to kind of go through it. And what we may do is revisit some of these key areas and do separate kind of maybe information bite size, like 15-minute podcasts on it as well. But I kind of just want to get through that strategy process. So once we've kind of defined that, we've got the right people in the room, we've kind of got the criticality scoring for them assets.
Yep.
After that, that's when we can start to look at kind of Formicas and understand how these critical assets can fail.
Yeah. So this is where it now bridges into maintenance strategy. So we've got master asset list, we've got maintenance management systems, we're hopefully doing a bit of planning and scheduling, we're gathering information and data, and you know, that this sounds very quick, but it's quite a long process.
We know it's a long process. I think we, in terms of this podcast, more just going through there.
So obviously setting up your maintenance management system is not a one and done thing. It takes a bit of time. Once that maintenance management system is in, we then need to start knowing where we need to focus our attention on what assets. So we complete a criticality assessment that tells us what are our most critical assets as a score. We can then, if we're gathering sufficient data in the CMS system, we can then do Pareto analysis, which is going to tell us what assets we're spending the most time and money on. And then we can do something called an opportunity ranking, which looks at, you know, your quick wins. What's going to get, we know that that's a big issue. What's going to give us our biggest opportunity? Now we've got three tools that are telling us which of our, so we've got big extruder, super critical. We've got, I don't know, secondary extruder that we happen to be spending loads of money on. And then we know that the pump in the corner is real problematic for us, and we know there's an opportunity there. What we now need to start to do is look and review what our current maintenance is, what is currently in place. And then we usually do that process through a FEMICA, failure mode effect criticality analysis, which starts to look at these individual assets in a much more in-depth,
focused tool. Way. Yeah.
And this is why we have to do these tools first, because
you don't want to do that on everything.
You can't do it on everything.
And that's the problem as well. We don't want to get bogged down in all this information and stuff that's not valuable to the business maintenance plans.
And so your FEMICA is looking at what are all, we first, as a real basic rule, define the function of the machine. What is it meant to be doing in as specific way as possible? What are all the ways that it can stop doing that? What is the likelihood that it's going to stop doing that? The consequence, the effect, what currently is in place? Do we do anything, PMs, whatever?
Condition monitoring or anything like that,
And that may mitigate that. And if there isn't anything that mitigates that particular failure mode, we then need to decide through having, again, the right people in the room. So if we've identified that bearing failure is a potential cause, we need to have a condition monitoring expert that can, or the right team that can define, right, what do we want to do instead? Right, we need to do some form of condition-based maintenance strategy. And that really is where it then ties into part three, which is maintenance strategy. Yeah. So your FEMICA will identify the failure modes that are going to stop the asset performing its function. And through understanding the likelihood and the consequence, you can pick the ones, go through that to determine, right, how do we stop that happening, which is then deciding on your maintenance strategy.
And that's when we can start looking at kind of condition monitoring, the techniques that
condition-based maintenance, preventative maintenance, which we will talk about what each of those are individually in the next podcast.
Excellent. I think that kind of wraps up. I think this is going to have to be a two-part, isn't it? This is definitely
ultimately where we are now is going to tie nicely into part three, because at that point, you're with FEMICA, like you can go in and let these the next.
Yeah. With I know. I don't want to get. And again, I think what we probably will a good idea.
We're going to have to do though because maybe we do strategy like, is quite big.
Maybe we do 15-minute kind of bite-sized chunks on each bit, yes. and then we feed that in. Because yeah, if yeah. not, we're going to be talking for hours, aren't we? And I kind of want to keep these parts not brief, but just more information based in terms of what the actual structure is with it. So next week on episode 3, then we get into maintenance, I suppose. I think it's
yeah, so perfect. Next 3 we'll do maintenance strategy, and then we can then, once we've done maybe this reliability episodes, we can then start to pick the criticality assessments, the Formicas, the CMS is like little bite-sized 15-minute ones.
Yeah, I think that'd be great. I think that's a really good idea.
Because what we can do as well is we'll probably share with you guys some of our templates and how we do it.
And yeah, exactly. And we can bounce some ideas off some other people because we know there's some great guys out there that have some great, you know, techniques as well to be able to get through some of these things. So guys, thank you for tuning in. Thank you again for all the support and everything, and all the downloads. Keep it up, please, if you can as well. Something that I'm going to ask people to do now, if you've not kind of, if you listen on Spotify, if you listen on the Google Podcast, follow the podcast and subscribe to it, because then you're going to get the notifications when they come up, and obviously these are coming more regular now. And as well, please subscribe to the YouTube channel. We're nearly 100 subscribers now, and I know a lot of listeners listen to it without actually subscribing. Subscribe, because obviously these are going to be going up regularly now, and they're going to be popping up into your notifications as well. So guys, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you next week. Take care.